Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Michael Senko. You're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, guys. This is Wolf Hoffman from Accept, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
All right. We are back. Talking Metal 2.0 in 2021. Happy New Year, guys. Let's do this. Remember to support the show using our Amazon links. You can find those on markstriegel.net. Also, PayPal donations are gladly appreciated. You can do those also through markstriegel.net. Again, markstriegl.net. Our preferred way of supporting the show is through Patreon, where you will get a bonus podcast every week. If you do a $5 a month pledge or more, I will send you out a Talking Metal t-shirt. So join my friends like Steven Saylor, Steve Hoker, Mike Jones, Dan Gerwan, Chris Riley, Brad Dahl, and Mike Jones. I said Mike Jones. Yeah, those are our top tier supporters on Patreon. Love those guys. I also love Andrew Miller, David Gray, Drake, Fred Rutz, Jason Seth, Jeremy Weltman, Joe Ryan, Mario Schrantz, Matt Carroll, Metal Dan, Michael Street, Sam Soupy, who is very active on Twitter. Love seeing your tweets, Sam. Sean Richmond, Steven Rodriguez, Tommy Henderson, Anthony Mackey, who might be coming on the show soon, Jerry from Long Island, Gregory Muse, James Bennett, Jean Eugene DX, Jean-Francois Blas, Johan Enderstrom, John Bovary, Kenny McCrimmon, Richard Langridge, Ron Keel, and a big shout out to my buddy Victor Ruiz, who does the bonus podcast that is available only to the patrons of Patreon. Let's get into the show. All right, we got some great guests on the show today. We have Michael Shanker. Wow. Always an honor to talk to somebody as legendary as this man, and another German legend of a guitar player, two German guitar players today, Wolf Hoffman. Now, the Wolf Hoffman interview was already a part of the Talking with Mark Striegel podcast, which is my other podcast. If you don't subscribe to that, please go do so. But knowing that I don't have nearly the subscribers on that podcast, I did want to give it some love here on Talking Metal. So that'll be what brings the episode to a close today, is my interview with Wolf Hoffman, conducted, I don't know, late November, early December, I'm thinking, of 2021. So stay tuned for that. But we will hit the exclusive Michael Shanker interview first. And yeah, Happy New Year, guys, and thank you for supporting again on Patreon, on PayPal with PayPal donations by just simply buying a t-shirt. I'll sell you a Talking Metal t-shirt for $15. Just send me your shirt size, your address, and your name through my PayPal account, which is paypal.me/Mark Striegel. My name is spelled M-A-R-K-S-T-R-I-G-L. Yeah, so psyched to hear from the two guests that we have on the show today. We'll catch up with Emily, my wife, in a little bit. And we'll also revisit a classic album the album Metal Heart, which I got Wolf to talk about on in the interview. So we're gonna revisit that. I'm gonna talk to you about some of my feelings about the Metal Heart record by Accept, which is now over 35 years old. Can you believe it? Wow, time flies, right? So let's talk about a sad topic. You know, 2020 sucked for many reasons, we all know. But it also sucked because we lost so many great heroes. And I mean, I feel like almost, you know, from our era, when I say our era, I mean us guys in our 40s and 50s. And I know we have some younger listeners, but who appreciate that time frame of music. But I will say, for me personally, wow, Lee Kerslake, who played on two of my favorite records, Diary of a Madman and Blizzard of Oz with Ozzy. Wow. Lee Kerslake, rest in peace. Donnie Hiller, which, man, what an important band Trauma was. Not only did they give us, you know, Cliff Burton, pre-Metallica, he was in Trauma, and there's some great stuff by him you can hear with the band Trauma, but Donnie Hiller's Trauma went on to signed with Shrapnel and do all sorts of great music, and he was a friend of the podcast, maybe not a superstar, but somebody I listened to as a teenager and loved talking with him three or four times through the years. Sad to see you go, Donnie, and shocked, really, because far too soon, man. Rest in peace, brother. Donnie Hiller of Trauma. Eddie Van Halen, I mean, what can we say? Fucking sucks, man. Van Halen, gone. We never got that final tour with Michael Anthony and Roth, which was supposedly being planned. Far too soon, man. Really freaking sucks. Leslie West just passed away. A guy I always wanted to interview, and I hung out with him when I worked as a producer on a show called That Metal Show on VH1 Classic. On our rap party, Leslie came down. He had done some music for the show, I believe, right? Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, he came down and he was hanging out. He was in his wheelchair. He was at the bar, not drinking, but hanging out at the bar. I got introduced to him, and yeah, man, he was great. We spoke for like 20 minutes that night, and it ended with him with me telling him, "Hey, you know, I do a podcast called Talking Metal. I'd love to interview you with that." And I reached out to somebody who then was supposed to reach out to him. I never heard back. So that was 5 years ago. Another person I'm very sad I never got the chance to interview, because he was always on my radar. You know, hey, I'm going to get to Leslie. I'm going to circle around and get an interview with him. Well, didn't happen. Reed Mullen from Corrosion of Conformity. I always loved more of the sludge era of Corrosion, COC, more than I did the hardcore era. But again, you know, you got to give a shout out to Reed. Gone way, way too young. Neil Peart of Rush. What can you say? Tragic, horrible. Oh, so many great lyrics and stories that painted my imagination. Listen, we know he's a great drummer, one of the best rock drummers ever. But how about those lyrics? Let's talk about those, man. Sitting there, staring into the moving pictures record, hearing the story of the Red Bergetta play out on the uncle's country farm. You know, craziness. I mean, he was so good with those lyrics. I mean, don't even get me started on 2112. Neil Peart, gone way too soon. Bob Kulick, another guy who'd been on the podcast many times, who would email me personally talking, you know, asking me questions. And I attempted to get him booked to do a solo show in New York. We got close, but the money just wasn't quite there. Very sad. I felt like he turned a little bit angry towards the end. I'm not sure. I probably shouldn't say that. But rest in peace, Bob. You gave us so much great music, you know, with Kiss and through your producing. You won a Grammy producing a song from Motorhead, a cover of a Metallica song. Bob, rest in peace, my friend. UFO, a band that I've always loved, but not over the top love. I mean, I'm not like obsessive like Eddie Trunk is or something like that, but I should say, maybe love is a strong word, a band that I've always appreciated. And I have numerous UFO records and got into them more later, like in the 90s, kind of after the fact. But Paul Chapman and Pete Way, both gone. Saw Paul Chapman not too long ago with UFO on stage. They were touring with Saxon. Saw him in some weird theater way out there in western New Jersey. It was a great show. And Pete Way, of course, I never saw him with UFO, but I saw him with Wasted opening for Maiden, which is a highly, highly underrated commercial hard rock metal band from the 80s, Wasted, Pete Way's Wasted. And Martin Birch, who, wow, produced, I mean, all you got to say is Maiden, but he did so much more than that. You know, I mean, just go to his Wikipedia page. What a legacy. Heaven and Hell, right? Did the Sabbath era Dio stuff? Wow. Incredible. Martin Birch, rest in peace, the amazing producer. And Frankie Benelli, a guy who had been on the podcast numerous times. A couple of the interviews I did with him somehow only went out over the live stream, and they didn't get onto the show. But I know Emily did a great interview with him. I did an interview with him, a video interview, which I believe is up on my YouTube page somewhere. And Frankie Benelli, I tell you, when I saw them play at M3, really not that long ago, like I think it was 2019, right? Quiet Riot, I'm talking about. They brought the house down. I was sad when I heard James Durbin left the band, you know. By the way, he's got a couple new songs out that are pretty good, but I feel that him and Frankie probably had a major falling out. But anyways, Frankie, man, thank you for the great music with Quiet Riot through the years and for keeping that band going. And I will always remember my last time seeing you guys live on at M3, I believe, 2019. It was out of all those bands, that was one of the highlights of my M3 2019 weekend. I said that right after M3, and that performance sticks with me to today. So God bless all you guys, and thank you for enriching my life. Those are all people we lost in 2020, and I know we lost a lot of people in 2020, so what a fucking shit year. And I, you know, people might be wondering why I'm not talking more about Van Halen, but I've done a lot of talking about him. Obviously, one of my favorite musicians of all time, top three for sure. I mean, wow. All right, here we go. Let's, I feel like I'm thrown to a song, but I forgot. We don't play music anymore. Okay. So let's do this. Let's get into the interview with Michael Schenker. Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and we have a true legend on the phone with me today. What a thrill to speak with Michael Schenker again. Michael, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I got an advanced link sent over by Nuclear Blast to the great new album, Immortal, which is going to be released on January 29th. I cannot wait. It's really, really good. You're returning to the MSG, I guess, title, I'd call it, after doing a couple records as Michael Schenkerfest. And before we talk about some of the individual songs, why is now the time to return to the MSG title or band name, if you will?
Well, the thing is that everything that I've done from 1980 is basically Michael Schenker Group. Even Nicole right. Schenker, even Temple of Rock, even Michael Schenker Fest, it's all Michael Schenker Group, because it always starts with me. And but it's good to have subtitles to keep track with what, because I had so many lineups, you know, what Michael Schenker Group are we talking about? And so it's good to have those subtitles, like for instance, like the first Michael Schenker Group was with Simon Phillips and Mo Foster. The second was with Cozy Pop, MSG. The next album was called MSG, which was with Cozy Powell and Paul Raymond and Chris Glenn and so on. And so people know by Michael Schenker Group what it is and MSG what it is. unless you go to Macaulay Schenker Group, which is also Michael Schenker Group, but I gave him the M,
right.
So I can keep the MSG, and I didn't care if he had the M or not first, but you know, and then you know, I had my middle years, and I was that was my experience. I mean, experimental time of acoustic instrumentals, electric instrumentals, and cover versions, all that kind of stuff. I wanted to get out of my system. All the things that I wanted to do, I couldn't have done with Ozzy Osbourne or Deep Purple or Scorpions or UFO, and other bands that asked me to join. And so those middle years were very, very fulfilling. And but you know, and then at some point I and that all went under Michael Schenker,
right.
Those experimental, you know, days. And yeah, so basically it categorizes and it keeps everybody informed roughly. You know, for instance, Michael Schenker Fest is all original singers from the 80s, Temple of Rock is with the Hermann Weber, Francis Buchholz, and Dougie White from Rainbow.
Right.
And so people, if I would just call everything Michael Schenker Group, I think that there would be a mess.
Right on. Right on.
So now I think that way. And anyway, so like, you know, to answer your question is, This is my 50th anniversary, so it's Michael Schenker's anniversary, not Michael Schenker Group. And but it's Michael Schenker 50th anniversary, Immortal, performed by the current MSG Michael Schenker Group. And whatever pops up, you know, the original idea was not. I was actually having, you know, in 2019 when I realized that the 50th anniversary was coming up. You know, I was looking for musician guest fans, you know, to celebrate, and but it was dragging on, and it was going to a point when I realized I missed the timing, you know, because it should have been 2020 to be released. But then my agent told me that, yeah, but Michael, your album came out 72,
right? Yeah,
Scorpion, Lonesome Crow, and so. So I've got 2 years, and so I had hope again, but this time, you know, getting musicians from all over the world together to celebrate, it's a really tough, long process, and so that's why I actually thought I missed the timing. But the main thing is, the first note I put on the record was, you know, when I was 15, I put it on the which was with the Scorpions, Lonesome Crow. And it was also my first ever written piece of music that I wrote all by myself in my mother's kitchen. And there was nobody there. Actually, Michael Foss, my co-producer, he sent me the original credits. It says Michael Schenker lyrics, Rudolf Schenker lyrics.
Wow.
We had zero knowledge of English. How could we have done the lyrics? It's complete misinformation. And it should have said, Michael Schenker music, and then whoever wrote the lyrics. And so anyway, it's just kind of you know, basically the everything is Michael Schenker Group, and it's good to have, you know, to have it categorized in different names.
And you mentioned the song from Lonesome Crow that is on the new Immortal record, that is In Search of the Peace of Mind. And I do want to talk to you about that song. But first, let's talk about some of these other songs and players on the record. Some of the people you were just mentioning, like Robin and Gary and Simon, are actually a part of this record, as well as many others. Let's start with Night of the Dead. A great, great song. Love the guitar sound. Love the vocals. Ronnie Romero is doing the vocals on this. How did it work with Ronnie?
No, Ronnie actually, you know, that's what I was actually continuing saying. then I decided to make a compact band, you know, to make it easier and to celebrate the 50 years and get it done. And Ronnie was already singing We Are the Boys on the Resurrection album, Michael Schenker Fest. And so I asked him, hey, would you like to be the main singer? You know, so he was supposed to be singing all the 10 songs. Actually, there's 11 songs as a bonus track, so just in case we need one for a B single or something. And he said yes. And then Barry Sparks, he kept calling me. I mean, he kept actually emailing me, Michael, I want to be your bass player. I said, you got it, you know. And so I had a compact with Steve Mann and Bodo Schopf and, you know, some of the Michael Schenker Fest lineup. And so the musicians. And so and that was it. That,
yeah.
You know, Ronnie was going to be the singer. And but the problem was that all of a sudden that virus sneaked up and everybody panicked. And, you know, I thought like, oh, no, what now? You know, and so, you know, when I actually ended up in Germany, eventually, which was quite complicated because of all the borders being locked when I drive. And when I had put my backing tracks down, we called up Ronnie, and Ronnie said, oh, sorry, I can't. I don't want to go on 14 days quarantine.
Right.
And I'm committed to other things, blah, 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 blah. And I think he lives in Bulgaria. And I said, and we said, oh, don't worry, we call you back when... You know, and so what now? And, you know, Amy, my partner, she's a bass player and she has a very good taste. She's a consumer. I haven't listened to music for 50 years. I have no clue what's out there. And so she suggested Ralph Schippers, you know, and that's how we actually step by step. I mean, you know, I call that virus like a bittersweet experience because it changed direction of musicians in such an incredible way that what I tried to do in the beginning in 2019, which was so much hard work and didn't work out, and then wanting to do a compact, then all of a sudden everything went back to the original idea, but I didn't have to do anything.
Right.
It just came all by itself. You know, people were calling up Michael Frost saying, I heard the 50th anniversary, Michael Schenker, I want to make a contribution. I'm a fan. You know, that was Brian Tichy, you know, a fantastic drummer. He offered 6 songs. Then he called back and said, like, hey, a buddy of mine, he's a fan, he wants to do a keyboard track. And that was Derek sharing, and I said to Michael Foss, what are we going to do with a heavy duty keyboard player like him? You know, we have already got Steve Mann who's doing all the coloring. I wanted to make sure that all my that the album is more guitar oriented, and I just wanted him to sprinkle some little bits of pieces from the keyboard point of view. And so Michael Foss said, like, well, maybe you can have a jam with Derek. And I said, a jam? I never had a jam with a keyboard player in my whole life. And you mean like John Lord and Richie Blackmore?
Right.
Yeah, maybe something like that. You know, I said, actually, you know, maybe you're right. You know, it would be great for the fans to hear something I've never done before. And so we ended up... And unbelievable, out of nowhere, you know, Ralph, next day, when I mentioned Ralph Schippers to Michael Frost, the next day they were recording. And
wow.
So I couldn't believe it. When I heard the voice, I was blown away because I didn't know something like that exists. And so we ended up with, right in the beginning, with Ralph and Titchy and Derek on a heavy-duty song, like, you know, In the Face and that became Drill to Kill, you know, and it just continued like that. We called up again Ronnie, are you ready? I'm sorry, I'm still, you know, locked up and then I can't come and, you know, I don't want to go on quarantine. So don't worry about it. We call you up again when we have, you know, we look for a solution and then we check with you later again. And then,
right.
And that's how we then I said to Michael Cross, like, what now? We need a, you know, we need a singer. And he said, Jolin Turner. And I said, you must be joking. Have you got contact to him? He's my favorite, one of my favorite singers. And I had him on my website, you know, for introduction from the Heavy Hitters album. And that we did together, and you know, he was on my website introduction for 2 or 3 years. And I said, like, what, can you get him? The next day they were recording. I got 2 songs out of him.
Yeah, I love that song, Don't Die On Me. Don't Die On Me with Jolin Turner. It's so good, so good.
I'm a fantastic singer, and we are fans of each other, and it's just kind of incredible how the universe sometimes works, you know, and much better than self.
Yes.
If something is meant to be, it just kind of comes together. It's really incredible. Then after the rain, you know, Michael Foss said to me when I came back from the hotel in the morning after I put my backing tracks down, I did this lyrics, and he always writes B plans for lyrics and melodies just in case a singer gets lost or needs some help, and he said that this is what I did, and I said, Michael, this is so beautiful, only you can sing this. So he got that song,
right.
and the other one was Queen of Thorns and the Queen of Thorns and Roses, which was a very unusual song. And the way Michael was singing it, I couldn't imagine anybody else singing it. The same for After the Rain. And so, you know, and then eventually, you know, Ronnie was available. And so we started with Ronnie, and that's how he ended up with only 4 songs, you know, meaning including the bonus. Yeah, 4 songs, I think. And of course, he was singing on In Search of the Peace of Mind. And, you know, and then I asked Gary Barden, you know, because In Search of the Peace of Mind is a very important song. I was 15 years old. It was the first music I ever wrote. And the lead break in it is so perfect. I would never change a note ever. Just like imaginary Western, the theme of the imaginary Western from Leslie West or Stairway to Heaven. It was just so perfect. But the rest of Lonesome Crow, you can hear I'm 15 and I'm developing. But that solo came from somewhere else. I couldn't understand. You know, it was just up to this day, it is perfect, you know.
Yeah.
And because it's In Search of the Peace of Mind, which is the theme of my life, you know, looking for contentment and freedom, you know, that song became very important. But I wanted to make it an epic. And so I put on the end of the song some, you know, just made it an epic, you know. And when I actually ended up listening to it, what went on it, it sounds like an inner conversation, you know, like making choices this way or that way. Should I make a shortcut? Should I go this way? You know, like inner conversations that we all have. And on that song, on that solo, it sounds like the guitars are actually, it's an inner conversation expressed by guitar playing. There's a howler in there, there's a wah-wah pedal, there's bendings. There's so many different emotions there that kind of sounds like a conversation between, you know, in yourself, between making choices. And it actually describes my 50 years. So on that lead break, so I was so happy. Everything worked out.
It's awesome.
So incredibly easily that I feel completely blessed.
Right. Yeah. The songs that I've heard sound so good. I love After the Rain, that little cool finger picking, plucking intro you do there. So good. The song, again, you're talking about In Search of the Peace of Mind, originally done on Lonesome Crow by Scorpions way back in 1972, almost 50 years ago. What do you remember about making that record, Lonesome Crow? Are there memories that you have of going into the studio or writing the music?
Of course. I was only 15. I actually teamed up with Klaus Meine when I was 14. I'm a Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, Deep Purple fan. They actually all asked me to join them except for Led Zeppelin, but Ozzy Osbourne did, and Deep Purple did in 93, and so many other people like Phil Lynott and Lissy, et cetera, et cetera. But what was the question?
I was just saying, what do you remember about making the Lonesome Crow record?
Okay.
Yeah.
The first album, it was amazing because I was so young, and I actually made a record that a year later actually were coming out of the same radio in my bedroom that I heard one of my favorite songs, the Immigrant Song from Zeppelin, and I couldn't believe it. Wow, I'm on the radio, and it was like that. And making the record itself took only 7 days, and it was produced by a very famous German producer at the time, Conny Planck, and I wrote most of the music. I was only 15. The Scorpions were over, the rest of the guys were already 21. So somehow they took a little bit of advantage of me because I was the talent and wrote everything. And they actually put their credits as share owners, which was not correct and it's not fair. It's taking advantage of a little boy who has what it takes, for them to chase what they wanted. And they wanted fame and the rest. And I was just always, and I'm still today, the little kid in the sandbox, just having fun. Recreational, no expectation. I just love to put three notes together and create goose pimples. And then that's what I started in 1980 with Mike Koschenka Group, when I found a singer with no ego, very great voice, bluesy, and I wanted to do something smaller because I wrote Lights Out, which became a hit when I was 21 in 1976, and I ran away because I was afraid that now all my joy of the innocence of creating music was now I was trapped. That maybe the music business would be expecting me to do another Lights Out, And I did another Lights Out. I did, Pete Way called me back in, and we did Only You Can Rock Me and other stuff, and then Strangers in the Night. And if I would have stayed with UFO, it would have been one of the biggest bands ever.
Yeah.
But, for me, my vision was I wanted to get away from it. I had done my whole development from Lonesome Crow to Phenomenon, Forsyth, No Heavy Patting, Lights Out, Obsession, Strangers in the Night. So I was done. I was complete, and Rudolf found out, and he, needed my help. And I said, Rudolf, okay, for you and Klaus, I do this. And I opened the doors for America for them, and
with Love Drive,
the rest is history.
Right on. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that you just threw out there. I did want to circle back to Deep Purple. You said 93 they had asked you to join. Had you gotten together with them at that point and did some playing?
No.
Was it just?
I believe it or not, in 1 month in 93. The Scorpions asked me to play with them live in Europe and Japan to sell tickets, but I was only doing the acoustic part, but people didn't know that. So they thought it was a Scorpions reunion, you know, but you know, it filled the houses. And at the same month, I got a phone call to join Deep Purple. And I declined. And I declined for the same reason I declined Ozzy Osbourne and everybody else, because I was focusing on pure self-expression. I didn't want to copy anybody. Right. I didn't want to go in anybody's past. I didn't want to sell out. I wanted to fulfill myself. And that's what many people at that point never understood. They thought I wanted it all for myself, but they didn't understand that I was actually a very innocent kid in a sandbox. And I was not interested in chasing fame, success, and money, and all of that stuff.
Right on. And speaking of Deep Purple, it's been, I guess, 40 years since the release of the Michael Schenker Group album in 1980. Roger Glover produced that, or I think, was it co-produced? I can't remember if he produced or co-produced it with you. But what was
working? No, he produced it.
He produced it. Okay.
Roger Glover produced it.
Right on.
And that was the beginning of my connection with Deep Purple. I mean, everybody who leaves Rainbow... Richie Blackmore's Rainbow, for instance, joins Michael Schenker Group.
Right on. That's interesting. You mentioned Pete Way, who we lost this past summer. I know you guys had such a long history together and worked on so much music through the years. Were you in touch with him leading up to his death? Had you heard from him recently?
No, I actually, you know, it was a bit maybe more like two. I helped him. I helped him throughout all the years, you know, after UFO and after he split from UFO and so on. And we spent time in Arizona together. We did the plot and we, you know, and some life stuff together. And then we met again in England. And over the years, I always involved him and included him. And but somehow, I mean, Pete is such a lovely person, you know. He was never angry. He was always joking. He had so much charisma. He was even the bass player from Hot Chili Peppers.
Flea.
Pete was his idol, and Steve Harris, you know, Pete Way. Even Steve Harris dressed like Pete Way. I mean, the charisma of Pete Way was unbelievable. On stage live, you know, and he had the same offers from Ozzy Osbourne and the Rolling Stones as I had. It's very, very peculiar.
Right,
and,
wow.
But however, then I got the, you know, I ended up with Cozy Powell. I mean, Graham Bonnet, Dougie White, Ronnie Mel, everybody who left that family, that the Purple family, it kind of ended up with me.
Right.
And so Pete Way was such an icon, and he was bigger than he ever realized. But, you know, unfortunately, he lost control. Really, really step by step, he lost control. He went further down and further down and further down. You know, he just kind of, I don't know, he just lost it. He lost what he had. I think he still had it, but he didn't know how to get back to it.
When you say he lost control, he lost the connection to him, to himself musically, or is that what you're referring to?
No, yeah. he just lost it.
Yeah.
He just lost it. He just, his life fell into pieces.
Right. Hmm.
And I even had in the very end, not very end, the like 2-3 years ago, I even had his doctor's phone number, who is a singer, and I was going to figure out how we can keep Pete, you know, stay alive and build up again. And it was useless.
Right. Wow. Sad. Very sad. We only have a few minutes left here, so I did just want to see how you're doing. Are you staying safe? And what's keeping you busy besides music? Is there any other things that you like to do, shows you like to watch, other hobbies?
You know, The album would have never happened if I wouldn't have gone on quarantine.
Right.
Every time I went to Germany and came back to the UK, I had to go on quarantine. I did that trip four times. One time I was lucky, but I ended up 42 days quarantine.
Oh, wow.
It was unbelievable. I have a beautiful house and a great property. I rediscovered my garden. I love to design things. My father was an architect. I'm into, you know, creating little, you know, I just love to create. And that's what I do when it's time to get bored, I become creative. And that's what I did on the first 14 days.
Wow.
Second 14 days, it became a little bit more boring. And
right.
Plus, my partner is looking after her mother in Japan. And so I actually did all of this all by myself. I mean, I had to stay 14 days, 42 days altogether by myself.
Wow.
And the last 14 days, it was horrible. And I would not recommend it. Or would never do it again. I mean, unless I would be forced to. But I did have lots of things to do. And I'm a very creative person. I always create something.
Right on, right on. And I know we're just about at the end of our allotted time here, Michael. I did tell my listeners that I was going to be speaking with you, and I had a bunch of questions from them. But I guess the main question that came in from people like Jeremy Weltman were, are you going to be touring in 2021? Is it too early to know that, or are you planning dates?
We had the biggest show in Japan, you know, Simon Phillips on drums and Bodo Schopf, and the 5-hour program, A and B set, two times 5,000 seater. It would have been the same as the Budokan, 10,000, and two nights at Osaka, 2,000 each night. And so we have to cancel it. I prepared for that with the band, you know, for a whole year. It was a slap in the face, you know, because people said to me, you know, when it started in Japan, like, and Whitesnake also canceled, that, Michael, if you don't cancel, maybe Japan will, you know, or at least the government won't like you because you're encouraging people coming into a danger zone. And I said, I understand. But, you know, no energy gets lost in the universe. I whatever I did, you know, it kind of kept me going and in a good shape, and so eventually we had to postpone. You know, even Graham Bonnet dropped out of the Michael Schenker Fest because he had an operation on his shoulder, and we got Ronnie O'Meara replacing him. Ronnie O'Meara can sing like anybody. I mean, he's fantastic, unbelievable. Totally professional, and you know, and then it got postponed to December, and then it got postponed, and then finally, as time progressed, and it looked like, and then the vaccine and stuff like that. I guess the agents started to have hope. Actually, two big festivals, Graspop in Holland and Fest Hellfest in France, got postponed also for 1 year. So, but we're doing that in June.
Okay,
and then,
cool.
We have now a definite tour plan for 21 October, which is four shows in the UK with Dora Pesh supporting, and we do like one, two, three, four, five shows in Europe, Barcelona, Madrid, Turin, Bratislava, Holland, and then they are working on Russian. Actually, they got some Russian dates, but they are not announced yet. And I'm sure as we, you know, as time goes on and things look better and better and better, there may be all of a sudden, the biggest tour we have ever done, the longest.
Well, we need it. We need you back over in the States. We can't wait to get you back in the New York City area. Definitely need our live music. And in the meantime, you have given us this great new record, MSG record, Immortal, which will be released on January 29th. So we cannot wait for that. Michael, it's always great talking with you. Thank you so much.
It's a Michael Schenker Group record. And that's what MSG stands for. Some people don't know that. And it's Michael Schenker's 50th anniversary, you know, Immortal. And that's what we are going to promote.
Absolutely. And it comes out again, January 29th.
Not that album. We're going to be promoting that album, but we're going to be playing all the classics as well.
Right. Celebrating that 50 years.
Yes.
Correct. Awesome. Michael, it's been great chatting with you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Keep on rocking.
All right. Michael Schenker, appearing for, I believe, the fourth time on Talking Metal. That was the fourth time he was on. The first time I interviewed him, he was a little bit grouchy. The second time I interviewed him, he was awesome. The third time you interviewed him, he was awesome. Right, Emily?
Totally.
Emily is here. Say Happy New Year, Emily.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah. And then that was my fourth time interviewing him for Talking Metal. Or I'm sorry, my third time, because you did one of them. But I actually interviewed him backstage at that metal show when I was working on that metal show. So
when he played with
Kurt Hammett.
Oh my God, that was amazing.
He was great there. So five interviews the Striegels have conducted with Michael Schenker, and I would say four out of five have been awesome.
Yeah, I was sad I couldn't do that last one. I had like a work obligation that day.
Yeah, it's so weird. We don't play music now. Like I just, it's...
There's a little weird
musical transitions, and but there's no music. But
it's okay though. I mean, I think people dig just hearing you say what you have to say. You know.
Yeah, and numerous requests for you, Emily. Where's Emily? She hasn't been on. I swear to God. It makes me happy and sad at the same time because I feel like the show isn't as good without you.
Oh, but, please. Yeah, okay. Whatever.
So speaking of good, I got our shaker here. This is vodka. And it's not just any vodka in here. I'm shaking it up. It is Dash Vodka.
Dash Vodka.
You've heard John
and
I mention it.
I love that you have the shot glasses on the bed.
Yeah.
What if they spill?
We're not going to. Why don't you tell us what we're about to drink? Because I've never tasted this before.
This is insane. So I'm reading about this. It's 7 times distilled. Okay. And all I had to read was it pure essence to sun roasted Thompson raisins, and then it mentions coconut shells. That's all I had to hear. 7 times distilled, and then you mention raisins and coconuts. I am not a connoisseur of vodka, but I know what I like and I know what I don't like. So we're about to taste this and see what it's like. Okay. I like smooth. I will admit, I am a little bit of a...
It's a big shot.
I'm not a connoisseur, but I know that
toast.
I like smooth. Toast.
To the woman who saved Talking Metal.
Please.
Oh, and let me say, wow, that is very smooth. No sharp after bite or anything.
Nothing. I mean, delicious.
I know that Hank was gracious enough to send us this all the way from Texas.
It's pure honesty right
for
there.
For free. But yeah, I'm looking into your eyes. I'm like that. Usually when I have like a hard alcohol, I like
me
twitch
too.
A little.
I will always
that
make
is
a face.
Totally smooth.
I'll always make a face at you. And there's no face. It's just delicious.
Wow.
But that's also very dangerous because that means I'd be blasted in like 20 minutes flat.
Drink that slowly. We still have to get our children to bed. What? It is December right now. We're recording this a little bit early, guys, but you will be hearing it in January. So once again, Happy New Year. Hope you enjoyed that Michael Schenker interview. We do have Wolf Hoffman coming up in just a second. But I did want to sincerely say thank you to Emily because this, I don't believe I've shared with the large viewers. I may have mentioned this to the Patreon folks, but...
Are you about to embarrass me?
Well, at Thanksgiving this year... my mom actually came up the day before Thanksgiving and we had dinner with her
just her in our dining room. And she was supposed to have Thanksgiving with my brother's family the next night, but then they got sick. It turned out being COVID. So thank God she didn't go there. My brother actually didn't get it, but that's a story for another time. She spent the day before Thanksgiving with us, and I was telling her about my plans for taking the podcasting up a notch, her and Emily, and the whole launch of Talking with Mark Striegel, which I hope you guys subscribe to my other podcast. But Emily is the one who really said, well, instead of starting over, why don't you just realize and be and have gratitude and be grateful for what you already have with Talking Metal, which is thousands of subscribers and a devoted fan base, and take that up a notch instead of letting it kind of fall by the wayside and becoming secondary to this other show that you just started that you really don't even have many listeners for yet. So it caused me to spend a day or two seriously thinking about what you said, Emily, and come to my senses that this has been my really my love for over 15 years now. And I think there would be an enormous gap in my life without it. So thank you. You really, you talk sense into me and in many ways saved this show.
Well, it's interesting because we haven't had this discussion since Thanksgiving Eve. And I feel like having your mom here with me as backup, I kept on turning to your mom and she was agreeing with everything I said. I knew that you would also listen to her. And I've been here since the beginning and I know I've met the fans and I know what Talking Metal means to me as someone who's been on the periphery.
Right.
And I just think it's
more you've been more than on the periphery.
But, I mean, okay. For the most part, though, I have been. But yeah, I'm your biggest fan, of course. And I just didn't want to see it fall by the wayside at all, regardless of how the format changes.
Yeah. Well, I said to you, well, I can't play music anymore. And I told the people I wouldn't do the podcast if I can't play music. And you said, who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, you were the one who said people probably listen more for you. And I've had some people say that since I've announced that I won't be playing music anymore, that, you know, well, we listen for you, Mark. I had one person say they fast forward the songs. Anyways,
I do.
So, and you know, so I'm like, all right,
I listen for the interviews. And I had a handful of
people said that they will miss the music, but this is where we're at. We legally are in jeopardy anytime we play music. And if we're going to do this moving forward, I think we have to dot all our I's and cross all our T's. And thank you for encouraging me to keep this going. So I'm devoted. We're at 903 today. I'm devoted at least until 1,000.
Oh, come on. We're devoted to the end of time. Till we roll over in our grave.
Really? Okay.
No.
Well, hopefully that won't be before 1,000.
It's so fun. Come on.
It is. But anyways, I would ask you what song you want to play for the listeners right now, but we can't play any songs. Are there anything you're listening to? Who is your favorite? You said this is surprising.
Oh, yeah.
And you should be honored because this is one of the most brilliant musicians of our time who actually played harmonica on a Kiss cover when Lenny Kravitz covered Deuce by Kiss, who played the harmonica. Your most listened to artist of 2020,
It was Stevie Wonder.
There you go.
Which is, you know, I have a lot of Stevie Wonder 45s but the 80s stuff, like Part-Time Lover and, you know, I Just Called to Say I Love You. I have those 45s downstairs, but of course, you know, I got into the 70s Stevie Wonder later in life. And I've just, during the pandemic, I found myself drawn toward a lot of like, I'm into the funk and the soul just to keep myself dancing and moving and feeling like upbeat. I'm still listening to tons of metal. Hello. But I was shocked to see that Stevie Wonder was my number one musician of 2020.
Yeah, you should be
proud.
That's awesome.
I love him.
Can't go wrong with that.
I love him. My three Stevies, Stevie Wonder, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Stevie Nicks.
Right on.
That's why I named our plant Stevie. That new plant, I bought like 20 new plants, by the way, listeners.
What new plant? There's like about 50 of them.
I've been on a...
Are you watering them? Because there was one in the kitchen that was like moist and another one that was like bone dry.
Well, some of them need to be dry.
Okay.
Some of them, that I bought are meant to be dry before you water them. But anyway, the one that's in the kitchen on our kitchen table, I named Stevie, but no one will ever know what Stevie it is.
Right.
Stevie Nicks, Stevie Ray Vaughan, or Stevie Wonder. You'll never know.
We'll never know. Okay. And we do have a new family edition, guys, Otis the Pug, which you can see on Instagram, on my Instagram page. I think I've posted a couple of them. Emily's posted some.
Why won't he stop peeing on that bed?
Yeah. We're having a hard time housebreaking him, which he's been home. How long have we had him now? 3 months?
Not even. No. Okay. Like 2 months. But still, I am queen of housebreaking. And I had Ozzy. Oh, my God.
We got him in late October. So,
but Ozzy was housebroken in 2 weeks.
It's really been exactly 2 months.
Pearl was housebroken in 3 to 4 weeks.
It's only been 2 months. I feel like we've had him like a year.
I know,
year.
Me too. But no, he's a dum-dum.
Right.
He's a small brain, wonderful love of my life. I love this dog so much, but he might be a little bit of a dum-dum. It's like, I have the door wide open to the patio and he's 10 feet from it and he'll just like pee on his bed. Right in front of me.
Right on. All right, Emily. Well, right now we are going to, I can't remember what order I'm doing things in here. This is the new format, but I believe we're going to get into, this is what we're going to do. We're going to hear me talk about one of my favorite records, Metal Heart by Accept. Great, great
Udo.
Album. Yeah, Udo Dirkschneider.
I mean, seriously. Did you see Udo's Christmas message?
No.
Oh, God. I nearly cried. I love him so much.
What was it?
It was just this really sweet Christmas message that was just like, hope to see you next year. It was everyone go look at it because it's amazing. Udo, he seriously melts my heart. Melts my heart.
Yeah. And Wolf Hoffman, we're going to hear from him in just a second, who is really at this point, I believe, the only remaining member from the classic era of Accept. So let's give a listen to him. But first, let's talk about the Metal Heart record. Emily, thank you for joining us. And everyone can follow you on Instagram, which is linked through my new website, markstriegel.net. Here we go. Classic albums. A new segment here on Talking Metal. Hey guys, so I'm testing out a new segment right now, which may or may not become a part of the weekly podcast, or maybe it's a bi-weekly thing we do here on Talking Metal. Not exactly sure yet. It is where we look back at a classic record, or at least a record that I consider to be a classic. So today we have Wolf Hoffman on the show in just a bit, which a lot of you may have heard that already because it was a part of the Talking with Mark Striegel podcast. If you haven't heard it, please stay tuned for it because it is a great chat with the legendary guitar player who was such a massive part of the album I'm about to talk about. It is Metal Heart by Accept, an album that for me was really, really important. And yeah, so this is scripted. I wrote this out. It was a part of my weekly email that goes out, which if you don't get the weekly email, you can sign up for that right on markstriegel.net. I encourage everyone to do that. And here we go. Metal Heart by Accept. A little over 35 years ago, the German rock band Accept released the album Metal Heart. It is one of my favorite albums of the 1980s. Was it as good as their 1983 album Balls to the Wall? Most people say not quite. I say yes. Don't get me wrong, Balls to the Wall was one of 1983's greatest albums, but the world of music changed tremendously between 1983 and 1985, and Accept embraced that change with songs like Midnight Mover and the radio-friendly Screaming for a Love Bite, which incidentally ended up receiving very little love from radio. Some fans took issue with these two songs, especially Screaming for a Love Bite. Metal was massive in the mid-1980s, yet it still somehow remained a private club for many fans. I think that when certain fans saw a band expanding their sound commercially and inviting new outsiders to the metal party with hooky tunes, they felt like their world was going to be infiltrated by jocks, cheerleaders, pop fans, yuppies, people who didn't wear concert t-shirts every day, and other undesirable members of society. In 1984, Rat proved that a commercialized version of metal could reach the masses and sell millions and millions and millions of albums with their perfect Out of the Cellar album. In my opinion, it would have been nuts for a band like Accept to not at least dip their foot into the potentially financially lucrative commercial hard rock pool. The thing is, Metal Heart had some incredibly heavy cuts, too. With this release, Accept saw the return of Jarg Fischer to the band. They also welcomed superstar producer Dieter Dierks to the fold, who is currently experiencing massive success producing albums for fellow Deutschlanders, Scorpions. Some of my random personal memories of Accept in 1985. A record store at the Yorktown Mall in Lombard, Illinois, not far from where I lived, was giving away a free single of the two most commercial songs on the album. I still have mine. I pulled it out the other day and stuck a picture of it on Instagram. You can check it out there, at Talking Metal. Another great memory of Accept from this time frame, when they opened for Iron Maiden at Poplar Creek in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Of course, no relation to Wolf there. At this show, we snuck up front, and I remember being extremely nervous that we were going to get in trouble for being in the wrong seats and possibly ejected from the show. It didn't end up happening, but I did remember experiencing a little nervousness from doing that. And when Maiden came on, we actually retreated 20 rows back to our assigned seats. All right, the album breakdown. Side one, Metal Heart, the opening title track. One of the most fantastic metal tunes ever. Midnight Mover, so catchy, so hooky, but still hard and heavy, aggressive. One of Accept's finest moments. Up to the Limit. This is 100% classic Accept. It would fit in perfectly on any of their previous records. Great, great perfection. Accept perfection, that is. Wrong is Right. Wow, what an adrenaline rush to the max this song is. Screaming for a Love Bite. Metal pop perfection. Of course, it had Udo's singing on it, so that might disqualify it from actually being pop. Side two, Too High to Get It Right. Love the chorus. Man, Accept always had such distinct sound to their backing vocals, and it's relevant on many of these songs, including this one. I love the opening guitar part for this song. It just kind of, it's like this weird little thing that happens, and then it just kicks into this infectious groove, and they waste no time getting to the great sing-along chorus. So effing good. Too High to Get It Right, that is. Side two, the second song on side two, Dogs on Leads. A haunting, creepy, super simple, definitely AC/DC influenced, great tune. Teach Us to Survive is the next song. This is Accept Goes Jazz. I mean, listen to it. You'll hear some kind of weird jazzy influences on the guitar and bass, and it somehow works, believe it or not. The song is really, really good, which makes it possibly the worst song on this album of perfection. Every song, except maybe this one, is perfection. Living for Tonight. Now, this is the second to last song on the record, and if it were sung by Klaus Meine, it would be a definitive Scorpions classic that would have fit in perfectly on Love at First Sting. Very Scorpions-esque. Think about it. Listen to it and imagine Klaus singing this song. The epic closer, Bound to Fail. My yearbook, for some reason, I'm not sure why, if it was a sign of things to come, but I was so into this song in high school, I scrolled it like on the not the binding, but you know, like the pages when the yearbook is closed. I wrote it like on the pages there on the, you know, so when they're all together, you could read it. Yeah, Bound to Fail. I love this song. One of Accept's greatest songs. In some ways, it feels like it's almost a continuation of the title track, Metal Heart. But then, you know, at the 250 mark, it just hits this insanely excellent guitar melody, which quickly turns into an amazing German beer garden chant gone wrong. For some reason, there's like gunfire going off deep in the mix. I'm not sure what's up with that. Love it. I've read the lyrics recently, reviewed the lyrics, have no idea what they're talking about. I was wondering if it was somehow about Germany. I was trying to read some deep meaning into it, but I can't figure it out. But regardless, Bound to Fail. Just the perfect closer to this perfect record, Metal Heart by Accept. All right, there you have it. My recap, my rundown of one of my favorite records of the 1980s, Metal Heart by Accept. We're going to hear Wolf talk about this record in just a minute. And earlier this year, or I should say last year, 2020, I spoke with Udo about this record. So you can go back and check that out. Udo Dirkschneider. And again, there is a written version of this in my email from a couple weeks ago. I'm going to be doing this weekly email. I'd love to have you guys sign up for it. Just go to markstriegel.net and you can sign up for it right there. It's markstriegel.net. Thanks, guys. Right now, my interview, which was conducted with Wolf on December 4th, 2020. So let's get into that interview with Wolf Hoffman right now. Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and what an honor to talk to one of my favorite guitar players, a guy I've been listening to for decades and decades, and he's got some brand new, incredible music out with his band, Accept. Wolf Hoffman, how are you?
I'm doing good, my friend. How are you?
Oh, I am great, and I got an advance link to the new Accept record, Too Mean to Die. Wow, great, great stuff. I wanted to walk through some of the songs with you because My vibe of the record was the first two cuts, Zombie Apocalypse and the title track. I could hear Accept on it, but in some ways it felt like a newer sound. But then when it hits Overnight Sensation, suddenly I'm thrown back into that classic Accept sound. And it goes on. No one's master, and The Undertaker, I also felt like had that classic Accept sound. Do you feel like the band is branching out a little bit musically on this record that you haven't before?
Not sure I can agree on that, because okay, we've been, especially on these last five albums, we've had songs that are in that vein before, a lot actually. So I think maybe it's your personal taste, which is geared a little more towards it. Yeah. Less aggressive, more sort of sing-along.
Okay. Fair enough.
Kind of stuff. Because, yeah, we've had these aggressive songs for quite some time, and you know, and it seems like it's part of who we are now, or have been for some time, actually.
Absolutely. And you're back with Andy doing, is he producing?
That's right.
He's producing and mixing, or just mixing?
He is, indeed. No, he's doing both. Yeah. And he's very instrumental in picking out the songs, and he's deeply involved in the whole process, definitely.
Right on. And being that we're in COVID right now, was there a different approach to recording this than maybe there had been the previous albums with him?
No. Approach was the same, but at some point we couldn't get together because of the travel restrictions. And we had to actually have Andy online with us, where the rest of us were recording in Nashville and Andy was in the UK, and we could only communicate per Zoom or Skype or whatever we used. And he was able to listen in and, you know, make comments and all that, but he wasn't actually physically in the room. So that was a little strange, but we still got it done. We're still, you know, finished. That was only for part of the album. The majority was really recorded the traditional way with him being there.
Right, right. And how long were you working on the record? Did you start it back in 2019 or
what? I did. I mean, and it's a fluent process. I mean, I have my own place, studio, if you call it a studio, but yeah, I guess it is a studio. And, you know, that's where I start recording. And then at some point, you keep some of the stuff that you record. So it's never really a demo phase. And now we switch on a different thing and it becomes the proper recording. It kind of goes hand in hand, to be honest. So I met with Andy Sneap early in January to go through some of the ideas I had collected, and we were picking out the first songs by then and started recording in March for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then did another couple of weeks in June, and that was it. I mean, the recording is fairly fast if you know what you're going for, you know, if the songs are properly written and everything is clear and you know what you want, then yeah, it goes fairly quick.
So were most of the songs like lyrically and finished before COVID hit?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because it's interesting.
No, they weren't. I mean, some of it was actually done during the whole pandemic thing.
Yeah, because it's like a song like The Best Is Yet to Come. Like to me, being in this weird time we are in history, that it was, you know, there's some sadness there, but there was also this hopeful message in that song. And I couldn't help but wonder if that was lyrically maybe, you know, what's going on right now with us, you know, not being able to be with our loved ones, or if I was just interpreting it that way because of where we are in history.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, you can relate to so many things. And of course, you can relate it to this current situation, but it was written before, incidentally, because it really represents my life motto. And it was really something that I wanted, that's pretty close to my heart, because I actually do think the best is yet to come. And I'm really the eternal optimist. So there's a lot of stuff that, yeah, that I actually personally believe in. So I wrote some of the skeleton of the song, and then Mark and Martin actually finished the other bits and pieces of the song, and Mark sang it beautifully. It was one of those songs where I wasn't really sure whether it would end up on the album until we recorded it properly, because it was really not a typical, you know, surefire accept song. One of those what you hear, oh yeah, that's gonna be on the album. It was one of those songs where you go like, oh, that's cool. Let's see how that shapes up when it's all said and done, and then we'll decide.
And the album ends with just a very cool instrumental track. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about? Samson and Delilah? Yeah.
Is that Delilah? Samson and Delilah. And that is actually another example of a song that was questionable whether that needed to be on the album, but I had the idea, and it's actually based on classical stuff. And a lot of people know I've been doing that for years, even on some solo albums, where I take classical themes and just play them on metal guitar and mess around with them until, you know, they feel metal. And that's what I did here. I used two classical themes and made this instrumental track out of it. And Andy liked it a lot. He was the one pushing for it, saying it needs to be on the album, or it should be on the album. And it kind of adds a nice little color towards the end. It serves as a sort of a walkout music or something, like an outro almost, you know. It kind of brings everything to a close nicely.
It's great. Yeah. And again, we are talking with Wolf Hoffman, the new Accept record, Too Mean to Die, out January 15th. And are we booking live dates at this point for the band? I mean, I know, you know, you guys don't tour quite as heavily as you used to back in the day, but you always get out there and get some shows going. Are there dates on the calendar?
Yeah, and we actually do book a lot of shows. I mean, right now, there's a lot of shows on the books, but we don't know when they actually start happening, because a lot of this stuff was booked for last summer, and it's now had been pushed to the summer of 21. Festival shows all over Europe. We had a full headline tour booked for this upcoming album in January, and of course that's not going to happen now. That's been pushed back a year, so everything gets pushed back and back until the doors basically open again. So then, until then, they get postponed again and again, unfortunately. But hopefully by this summer we can be out there again. I'm hoping.
Right on.
Maybe a little too optimistic, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I hope so. The last time I saw you guys, I've seen you twice actually, at Irving Plaza in New York City with Mark. Oh, yeah. It's just been great shows. And I want to go way back in a bit to when the first time I ever saw you. But before we do that, let's talk about who currently is in the band. I know Peter is out, and of course you and Mark are we know you guys, but can you just run down the rest of the lineup of the band?
Sure. On the drums, we have Christopher Williams. He's been with us for some time now. I think maybe coming on 6 or 7 years almost.
Okay.
Then we have Uwe Lulis, the only guy living in Germany currently. He's the other guitar player. He's been with us for some time, I think equally long. They both joined around the same time. Got a brand new bass player called Martin Motnick. He filled in for Peter when he left about 2 years ago. And he's a great find. He is a German guy living in Nashville as well. So there's currently four of us from Nashville, which is nice.
Wow.
And then the newest member is Phil Schaus, a guitar player. And we took him on as a third guitar player, believe it or not, which is slightly unusual in the metal world. but we thought it was too good of a fit. We got along so great doing a orchestra tour that we did together that we decided we want this guy to be permanently in the band. And so we now have the luxury of having three guitar players on stage.
Yeah,
pretty awesome.
It's awesome. I saw some funny video of him where it was a while ago where he was like doing a
workout thing. Yeah.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
You know, that thing started as a joke because, you know, we always kind of make fun of ourselves about the stage moves and things, you know. So he was kind of poking fun at that. But a lot of people thought he was dead serious and they thought, oh, he's doing these workout videos and, you know, we want to work out with Phil. And now it almost turned into this. Well, like a series of workout videos that he's now doing. And it all started pretty much as a little bit of a joke, internal joke almost, you know, but, you know, people love it. It's great.
Yeah, they're hysterical. They're hysterical. And we'll try to link those in the show notes for today's episode. I wanted to go back to the first time I ever saw you live. It was opening for Iron Maiden at Poplar Creek in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. No relation to Wolf Hoffman, I assume.
Ah, funny.
And that was on June 16th, 1985. What do you remember about touring with Iron Maiden on the World Slavery Tour? Good memories?
Funny you ask. I've just been talking in a previous interview. Somebody asked me about what was some of the most fun memories I have from touring and which band was it with. And I said it was actually probably Iron Maiden. We had a really good relationship with these guys. One of the few times where we really, it was a sense of camaraderie between both bands, and we were, you know, always kind of poking fun at each other and joking around backstage, and it was great. It was really good because a lot of times bands kind of keep to themselves for some reason, but with Iron Maiden, it was really good times. And when I see the guys nowadays, we still talk about it sometimes. It was really great memories.
For a fan at that time, a 15-year-old fan, it was just the ultimate double bill there. You guys and Maiden, and I was such a fan of the Power Slave record, but then also of Metal Heart, which is what you guys were touring for at that point.
Yeah.
And that album just turned 35 years old. Any memories you could share about making that record? Good memories of making that record?
Good memories, yeah. Very good memories. I mean, it was recorded in Germany at the Dirk studio with the producer of the Scorpions. His name was Dieter Dirks. Like, his claim to fame was the Scorpions, and he worked with us there for the first time. So it was great. He was the first big name producer, so to say, that we ever worked with, and we learned a lot from him, and I think that it was a great album, really.
And has your guitar setup changed much since, like, Balls to the Wall and Metal Heart to where we are today? Because on those records, I swear you can almost hear the tubes of the heads on like Balls to the Wall and Metal Heart. What's different nowadays?
Pretty much everything, but it sounds still very similar in my mind. I mean, it's
just, yeah.
If anything, it's gotten better over time because the technology has improved so much. It's, you know, it's one of the lessons you learn over the years that equipment really only makes a little bit of a difference. It doesn't really make ever a huge difference. I'm actually sometimes shocked how similar it sounds now to back then, or the other way around. It almost doesn't make a big difference which guitar I use and which amp I use. And I've used it all. Trust me, I've used every possible combination of guitars, and pickups and strings and all the variables that you have and speakers. But it very much sounds still the same when I play it. It's just because who plays it and what you play, really. I mean, the riff or the song itself and the way that you play it, that makes more of the sound than the actual gear. A lot of times it's funny because a lot of people always ask me, how did you get that sound of Balls to the Wall, that opening riff? And I can play it on a lot of different gear. It would always sound very similar. It's really the riff itself has a certain sound too.
Absolutely. And you see that with so many guitar players, like when they're replaced, you know, I've heard people who maybe aren't musicians or don't know music quite as well say, well, as long as you have the singer, you know, people aren't, but it's not the case because the drummer, the guitar player, their personality comes through in the way they play it. And your personality has always been such a big part of the Accept sound. And we still hear that loud and clear on the new record, Too Mean to Die, again, out January 15th. We are so psyched to get the, I want to get the physical copy. Will you be doing vinyl of that, you know?
Yeah, they will. And you know what else they're going to do? They're going to bring back cassette tapes.
Oh, wow.
How cool is that? Yeah.
Wow.
They're re-releasing, I think, a limited edition of 500 each, the last five albums and the new one as cassette tapes. That took me by surprise. I thought, whoa.
Yeah, I've noticed some bands like the band Ghost, who I'm really into. They released their last album on cassette too. So I guess it's the new retro trend.
I don't even have a cassette tape anymore, but I guess some people do. Do you have one?
Yeah, I'm going to show it to you right now. It's the I still pull it out. It's the Sony Walkman right here.
Whoa, let me see. Which one is that? Oh, that's the sports edition or something.
Yeah, waterproof.
Yeah. Wow, look at that. Does it still work?
It still works, believe it or not. Yeah. And it had been sitting around for decades and decades. I hadn't used it, but I pulled it out recently and it still works.
I have a shitload of old tapes that I'd tried to digitize a while back, and I had some old tape machines, and on every one of them, the belt was just deteriorated because they have internal rubber bands that drive the mechanism or something. And a lot of those were just eaten up over time. That just deteriorated, you know. Yeah. So it's actually not, it's crazy.
So Wolf, I had put it out to my listeners that we were going to be speaking to you, and a couple of them came back with some questions. I wanted to throw those at you. Mike Jones wanted to know, who are your biggest influences as a guitar player?
Probably Ritchie Blackmore of, you know, Deep Purple and Rainbow fame, and then Angus Young from AC/DC, and then of course Uli John Roth is my all-time hero.
Nice.
I kiss the ground he walks on whenever I see him. I do the I'm not worthy kind of thing, and he always gets a laugh out of it. No, he's honestly amazing.
Absolutely. And Drake wanted to know if you had any memories about working with Sebastian Bach on the song Rock and Roll back in the late 90s. Any memories you could share of that?
Yeah, I do have some memories. He's a crazy motherfucker. No, I mean, he's a fun guy, but at the same time, he's high maintenance. I mean, he's really very intense guy to be around. And you know, it wears you out after a day or two. But I always liked his enthusiasm. I'm not sure I could take it, you know, 24 hours a day.
Right.
Like I said, it wears you out a little bit. But we had a good time. And I mean, the thing only lasted like a day or whatever to record one track. But he was like, yeah, he's intense. He was all about, hey, man, you do this awesome. Yeah. And he yells at you the whole time. So I'm not used to that. You know, I'm my mentality and his maybe don't necessarily match very well, but you know, it was fun.
Right on. And Jeremy Weltman wanted to know, besides working on the new album, what have you been doing to stay busy during the COVID times?
I went through my gear warehouse storage room and got rid of a bunch of stuff that I haven't used in years. I listed it on Reverb. And yeah, it was great. Nice. That was a lot of work to photograph it all, figure out the serial numbers and list it properly. And I'm quite happy that I sold about 30, 35 instruments and amplifiers. And some of it went to a museum in Europe and some of it went to collectors who cherish this stuff and are really happy to have it. And I'm glad to have it out of my hands because some of this stuff has just been sitting there. So it's one of those long-term projects that I wanted to do. And I guess all of us are trying to find stuff just to keep us busy because we've got nothing else to do, you know.
And when you sell your stuff, do you say, hey, this is Wolf Hoffman selling the stuff? Because I would think that would put some value on it for some people.
Yeah, of course. It's at a certain point, and like I said, a lot of the stuff that I sold went to people who just wanted for the memorabilia
right.
sort of value, not so much as instruments that they're actually going to play. They're just going to maybe hang it on the wall or have it in their man cave, and I don't know what they're going to do with it. But
right.
it's, you know, people just love having stuff with a history, and I can totally relate to it. But I you know, I'm feeling slightly bad if I have a lot of stuff that I don't really need or haven't used in years. So it, right. it needed to go. It was high time to let it go, and I'm glad.
Clean house a little bit, right?
Yeah, it makes you feel good every time.
That,
yeah, it feels like you accomplished something that you wanted to do for a long time, and you know, you lighten the load and thin the herd, and you move on.
Right on. And how often do you get back to Germany? Do you get back there often? Do you have a lot of friends and family still there?
Yeah, I do. I go back there several times a year. Yeah. It's a little difficult right now. I've been back twice this year, even because I have a dual... Normal people can't go there right now.
Right.
But I have
right.
dual citizenship, so I'm allowed, even during corona times, to go to Germany and come back here.
And how long have you been in Nashville now?
Oh, since OJ's trial. When was
wow,
that? 27
okay.
years ago?
Yeah. 93? I don't know.
93, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember moving into my house and OJ's trial was on TV. That's how I know.
Right. Right on. Cool. And Peter, obviously, he's out of Accept now. Do you hear much from him at all? No.
No. I'm really sad about the whole event, how it happened and that it had to happen, because after 40 years, I thought, I honestly thought we would ride into the sunset together and like, you know, ride this out until the very end. But he decided to, he no longer wanted this. And it was, you know, sad, but I can't change it. And so here we are moving on with new guys. And, you know, as sad as it is, him leaving, there's also the good side of new members being totally excited to be in the band. And that adds
right.
a certain amount of energy also, you know, because, you know, if somebody doesn't want to be in the band anymore and you can sort of sense it, and it was that case with him for some time, then brings everybody slightly down. And now that we got new guys, they definitely do the opposite. They bring fresh blood and fresh energy. And I think that was reflected in the songs to a certain degree. Also.
Yeah, I was going to say, you hear a lot of energy on this record. And
they
were involved with bringing ideas to the table too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Especially Peter's successor, his name is Martin Motnick, a German player who lives in Nashville also. He was actually instrumental in writing some of the songs. It was great.
Very cool. And again, the new album is Too Mean to Die by Accept. Wolf, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me. So thank you very much. Stay safe and healthy, and stay metal.
All right. Thanks to Blabbermouth, Brave Words, and Metal Sludge for spreading the word about my podcasts, Talking Metal, the one you're currently listening to, and of course, Talking with Mark Striegel, the new one. Subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, share on social media, follow me on Twitter at Talking Metal, and yeah, man, keep the flag flying. We're gonna keep this going. Talking Metal 2.0. No music. It's weird for me, guys. I have to admit it, but it is the right thing to do. All right. So big thanks to, in addition to those sites I mentioned, big thanks to our guests, Michael Shanker, Wolf Hoffman, and of course, my beautiful, wonderful wife, Emily Striegel. You can follow her on Instagram too. All the links, including her Instagram, are up on markstriegel.net, markstriegel.net. Use our Amazon links if you live in Canada, the United States, or the UK. All right, guys, talk to you next time. Be safe, be well, and we'll see you every Tuesday here on Talking Metal.